Welcome back to SIGGRAPH Spotlight. Today, we are kicking off a short series that dives into the future of production and features experts who've shined at the SIGGRAPH conference. First up, Alex Popescu, Generalist Supervisor at Industrial Light and Magic and mastermind behind Cassini Logs, an animated short. Here's Alex and our SIGGRAPH 2021 Production Sessions Chair, John Kalajian.
Hello, and welcome to SIGGRAPH Spotlight, part one of our Future of Production series. My name is John Kalajian, and I am the SIGGRAPH 2021 Production Sessions Chair. I'm excited to be joined today by Alex Popescu, Generalist Supervisor at Industrial Light and Magic. Alex recently completed Cassini Logs. We're here to discuss the making of that project, as well as where Alex anticipates the field of production going in the future. Welcome, Alex. We're excited to have you.
Very happy to be here.
Before we get into it, let's give our listeners a taste of who you are. What is your background in computer graphics, and what led you to SIGGRAPH?
First of all, thank you a lot for the invitation. Like, it's very exciting to get to talk about what's happening in the industry at the moment and specifically about what we've been up to. My story starts in computer science. So I actually studied computer science, focusing on computer graphics and artificial intelligence. And this was 15, 20 years ago. At the time, games were probably the most popular destination for computer graduates where I was. But I discovered the world of film, and through it, just the amazing people that are in visual effects. What really attracted me to it was this combination of skill sets. The thing in visual effects is that you can meet artists that come from a fine art background that just focus on painting, let's say, all the way to computer scientists that write new rendering algorithms or invent a new way of putting images on screen, and literally everything in between. So I just found myself very much at home in this world where you get to balance the two, you know, the art and the technology. So I joined MPC in London, and it was an amazing journey over there because it was literally that transformation of a lot of matte painting, a lot of projection work, switching into full CG environment. So I left MPC throughout the production of Jungle Book. Then I moved to Singapore to Industrial Light and Magic. A few years ago, I think it's about 5 years ago, my partner and I moved to Australia, where we were with Illura / Matt in Melbourne. The special thing over there, I think, has been the fact that the push towards USD was happening. And that's where it really felt like the next step in terms of collaboration, in terms of large sets, just because that was kind of my main focus at the time. And the thing that really shifted things and kind of started pushing me more towards filmmaking was the fact that I started playing with game engines. It was pretty much at the same time as USD is taking the world by storm in terms of visual effects, and there's so much more collaboration and being able to switch between packages, while the game engines were getting to a point where they were really attracting filmmakers through the ease of the tools, but also the quality of the graphics. And I still remember, I think, the first time I installed the game engine, and the first couple of days have just been this euphoric sort of experience. It's coming from a world of offline rendering. I think the fact that you could build a world, set up a few cameras, set up a quick edit, something just clicked for me, thinking that, you know what, this is something that I want to pursue further. From there, it's been very organic. I started with very simple sort of sets and setting up cameras. So my small videos looked a bit more like, you know, a drone photo shoot where you're literally editing your best shots. But the sandbox grew. And while I learned more techniques in terms of how can I get characters involved in my stories and how can I get mocap involved in this, and it just added a whole new dimension. I started focusing on storytelling, and it all kind of led towards building an amazing team for Cassini Logs and managing to do this quite complex 5-minute short film.
That's fantastic. And yeah, it's once the genie is out of the bottle going to a real-time engine, it's difficult to look back at offline rendering the same way and not think about how you could achieve the same results in that kind of almost instant gratification, quick turnaround. Just to take a step back, your progression from quote-unquote more traditional, let's say, matte painting, so faking the environments because of complexity reasons, to working on larger productions where perhaps map lines were extended further back or brought even closer to camera. What is your personal opinion or desire to do more physical modeling or physical world building and use map painting just as a backdrop element? Or because it sounds like you want to push the envelope for what's achievable in any package.
You know, the process is very much project driven. We don't consider that there's one solution that is going to fit everything. You know, map painting is very much alive. And these days, I think because of the amount of very high quality photography that is being able to be taken before a show, that really changed the world of map painting. Initially, it was a handful of people that were these amazing talents that literally changed filmmaking. Nowadays, before a film, the common process is to send a team of photographers and try to find the closest environment that is going to give you the tools to finish the shots in the end, right? What started maybe initially was just photography, now moved into photogrammetry. And if the matte painter was used to blending a few photographs and making sure that fits with the plate, now it's turning into there's a few photographs, then we have photogrammetry models that we extract, and then those become our 3D assets. And it becomes maybe a bit more of a layout exercise initially, just because the quality of the lighting got to a point that we don't really question the fact if we can get the lighting to look real. I think it's more about the art direction, the composition in the shots, and making sure you have the best elements. So that's probably where I see this new world going. Just the fact that initially it was such a big deal, I think, just being able to build the pieces of the world. And now we're moving towards, you know, these giant asset libraries, like what Megascans has done, again, kind of changed digital sets quite profoundly, I would say, because it created this mentality of, at least for anything that is not designed specifically for a project, there's already an asset out there. So it just provides a baseline for artists to just not worry so much about maybe sculpting the pebbles for an environment and just using the pebbles that are already there and focusing on how does this river look like? What makes it natural in terms of distribution? And if you take a step further from that, I think machine learning, artificial intelligence is probably going to help us even more in that respect. That if we look into the future, the tools that we have at the moment to create biomes or ecosystems, I do think are going to get more advanced. So if you combine the idea of very strong asset libraries, the idea of very strong scattering tools or rule-based procedural building of environments, that's just going to allow artists to focus on the filmmaking, you know. And it's what's very exciting for me is the switch from focusing very much on shots to focusing on sequences. So in visual effects, you know, traditionally it was you have five shots, you get five artists, everybody does their thing and hope that everything lines up in the end. Nowadays, we are big fans of if there's a sequence that can be contained and an artist can take ownership of that, you get so much efficiency and so much cohesion. And it's so much more rewarding for every artist, you know, when they can own an environment and then subsequently a sequence.
Let's talk a little bit about Cassini Logs, which was selected by Epic Games and screened New South Wales to be part of the Unreal Real-Time Short Film Challenge and was chosen as a competition winner. Tell us more about the impetus behind the production. What drew you to that short film? Was Cassini something you were working on and this was the right opportunity to produce this project for that contest?
It was an amazing moment in time where things just lined up. I met this crazy talented guy, Tim Cole, who was my filmmaking partner, I would say, at the head of Cassini Logs. And he, as I come from visual effects, he comes from more of a real-time background. So his experience came more from previs and virtual production and kind of using game engines in film in these very early stages of filmmaking. And he's one of those Unreal Engine wizards that materials don't have any more mysteries for him. And you come up with these crazy ideas and he comes up with crazy solutions. And we met, I think maybe about a year before we started a proper work on Cassini, and we chatted a bit about filmmaking. And the thing that clicked was just the fact that we both loved game engines and we loved what this is bringing to the field of filmmaking. But what we weren't seeing, I think, is just a focus on more serious content. I had this little idea of somebody fishing with fish, Like that's kind of how it started. It was a very simple sort of concept initially that, you know, imagining somebody that comes with a group of fish and that's kind of what they send underwater to look for whatever they're looking for. So I pitched that very simple image to him and, you know, it was very kind of rough concepts at the time. And I think probably a couple of months later, Epic Games kind of came up with a contest that was happening in Australia. So we just saw it as the perfect opportunity to get us in gear. And the time frame was quite tight on the competition. So I think from the moment they announced that there were 4 weeks just to prepare your pitch, to prepare whatever teaser you wanted to do, script that you wanted to do, and then 3 months for the actual making of the film. So we jumped right in at the opportunity. It was made in real time, which is what we were focusing on. We were planning on making it in Unreal Engine. So we just allowed ourselves to be a bit more ambitious because we wanted to push what can be done in real time and just take advantage of the fact that we can do real time effects and we can show real time sims. And we kind of wanted to test the waters, like how far can we push it? Let's take a simple story and add all these layers and see where it can go.
That's great. Now, when it came to, let's say, pre-vising versus going through and doing your blocking and your lighting in Unreal, was everything handled in the game engine or was there some aspects of pre-production into production that was handled outside of it?
The short answer is we did it all in Unreal because, again, the time factor was so much on our minds that we wanted to have a very fluid transition from pre-production to production and post-production. What we said is, let's try to build an environment where all these assets, if you want to call them, not just the individual assets, but the editing, the cameras, the pacing, we want to try to have a very fluid process. So from the beginning, as we build our previs, that's something that can just be iterated upon and we just update the assets inside our previs and it's just going to get better. And then later on, we're going to have a mocap shoot. And that's going to give us better animation that is going to replace the whatever temp animation we had initially. It was extremely, extremely fluid. And we leaned very much on the sequencer tools in Unreal, where from the beginning, the edit was done there. All the shots, all the cameras, everything was actually created in Unreal. The previs showed us kind of how long the movie's going to be, what's going to fit, where is it lagging a little bit, where do we have a bit too much, what are going to be the key moments. All of that was established very early on.
So as you're adopting this progressive refinement model, how difficult is it to go backwards from that in the sense like you're now getting used to seeing the end result or seeing the progression of your results in a real-time setting? Then you go back to the world of offline, but can you bring some of those methodologies with you because the pipelines are starkly different? How does your brain adapt to going in the reverse direction?
Great question. It's definitely a bit of a struggle, right? When it's, hey, we could work this way, but the final quality is probably not in the same spot right now, versus there's an established pipeline that delivers fantastic results, but the process, maybe it's a little bit more tedious. What I can say is just that it changes your mindset. Like I would really suggest to everybody that wants to try it to pick up a scene. At the moment, there's just so much free content. And you can literally pick up a scene and play around in it and try to edit three cameras together. That's what I would say. Set up three cameras, try to do a quick edit in whatever real-time engine you choose. And I think that's going to create a switch in mindset from very shot-driven, what I was saying before, to sequence-driven. And the more you push it, like for me, the more time I spent in the game engines, I think it made me a better filmmaker and a better VFX artist because I think I started thinking way more about the storytelling aspect and the bigger picture.
So you mentioned that the project was set up. There were two key environments, I guess, above the ice surface and beneath. You had only one character performance, primarily from mocap. I'm assuming that there was additional animation done on top of the mocap data. What were those limits that you hit, given that you did set yourself up for success with the time restrictions that were imposed by the festival? But what were some of the things that had to be left out or things that you wish you could have included in the project?
Definitely the biggest thing, I think, is the character animation. We did a mocap shoot quite late in the process, just because of how the timing and the financial side of the project was set up. And we had the time to build the assets, build the rigs, and we had some temp motion capture from our previous to our early stages, and that's what we lensed initially. Once we did the mocap shoot, all the action was much better, because instead of putting together little clips of mocap libraries, we managed to direct this with an actress and, you know, with an amazing stunt team, and we just had much better baseline animation. So we had to redo all the lenses, make sure that everything fits, and even the editing changed quite a bit. And again, in this progressive improvement model, one amazing thing that we've done was that Jordan, who was in charge of the rigging, showed me a setup where I could easily transfer the raw mocap data onto our character without cleaning it. So I was able to choose the best takes, get that into the edit very, very quickly. So in about a weekend, I had all the mocap replaced. So once we did that, then we could identify the animation that really doesn't work. And I think in the project, we're probably at about 70% raw mocap and then 30% stuff that has been touched up. So this allowed us to be very, very specific in terms of what we want to work on with the animators, the key moments that are either gestures with the hands that we weren't able to get or any sort of subtleties and interaction. The bit that we never really got to is the facial animation is extremely, extremely basic. So it was me performing a couple of the lines that we have in the film in front of an iPhone. And the setup was done probably quite late. It's fantastic that we got it into the final film, but I just wish, I think on that end, that we would have tried to do the mocap shoot somehow a little bit earlier to allow us to focus more on the animation and performance in general.
So it's hard to look back at the last year and a half of improvements that are come to real-time engines, but certainly what's coming in the very near future with the official release of Unreal 5. If you had to go through the process again, knowing what new systems like Nanite and Lumen are offering, would you be an early adopter or would you wait to see battle tested before moving forward with those types of tools?
It's probably a consideration that depends on the type of the project that you're doing. Like, I've done a couple of smaller short films or music videos where I think those are the perfect projects to try out this new technology. So everything I've done, I think I wasn't shy in terms of upgrading to the latest version of the engine and try to use the latest technology available, just because, like you said, there are leaps and bounds on each project. You know, just the cinematic tools are improving so much, the rendering is improving so much, the quality of everything from lighting to depth of field to the way you interact with the engine is just such an organic and such a fast-moving environment at the moment that I think on small projects, just go for it, kind of try the latest thing and experiment and see where that leads you.
Do you have any advice from a more traditional standpoint of what are the proper skills to learn before diving in and playing with all the tools, proper cinematography skills or an eye for composition? What are some of the key recommendations that you have or you were given when you were coming through the industry?
My take on the question is that a lot of the past, I don't know, 10, 15 years, let's say, have been about very specialized skill sets. Like everybody was becoming the best sculptor or the best texture artist, the best shading artist, lighter. And maybe it's a little bit my job or just my passion that I like to touch a bit different areas of the VFX pipeline or different bits of the filmmaking world. I really think there's going to be a shift there towards people that understand a few more fields, or because the technology is going to make the very specific fields maybe a little bit easier or technically more approachable, I think people are naturally going to gravitate towards owning a little bit more. So when you think of asset creation, I really think in the future it's going to be less about I model, but I don't do textures and shading. And it's going to be way more about I own my assets. And I, you know, at the moment, there's so many good shading libraries that can give you a baseline, and lighting is much easier. So we see so many amazing asset artists that have fantastic renderings, right, of their models, of their maquettes. And I can push that further in all of the fields. You know, the character artist may be learning how to do rigging, or the rigging artist getting into motion capture, the lighting artist that loves compositing. And I feel like it's really changing the climate from that point of view. So if I would start at the moment, I think I would try to think big picture. And like you said, learn the fundamentals, what makes a good story, that's going to help your career, whatever you do. The better you understand the different sides of it, the more efficient you are. And I think the better the result is going to be.
Absolutely. And someone who has the word generalist in their title can appreciate the kind of jack of all trades, but it doesn't also hurt to be a master of none. It's seemingly being more horizontal than vertical in your skill set, as you said. And so where do you see the next big trend beyond just tools and beyond the way that we go about creating these images? You mentioned earlier adoption or the continued expansion of artificial intelligence. So from your professional opinion, what does the next 2 or 3 years look like as far as making creative decisions? Would machine learning be 20% tool, a 50% tool? How much room does that leave you to be as creative as you can be when it can handle most of the technical work?
I think machine learning, once it happens, it's going to be the switch that is going to be quite fast-paced. It's already creeping into visual effects in terms of, you know, the deep fake technique, like for digidoubles. Nowadays, you know, it started as a bit of an online sort of test, right, with everybody using machine learning for facial animation or face replacements. And it's becoming an absolutely official technique that all the large studios are investing in. And I think that's only going to grow just to allow that subtlety. In terms of digital sets, like I said, I'm really looking forward to seeing the procedural nature, I think, taking a next step, just the complexity of the rule-based systems increase. And I think that's very close. At the moment, for example, Houdini is growing so much in popularity in visual effects. And it seems to me like one of these perfect tools that is very much procedural is at the core and at the, of the philosophy of the software, right? So moving forward, I can't imagine, like you're saying, that in the 3 to 5 years sort of time frame, that we're not going to start seeing artificial intelligence-based tools, machine learning-based tools creeping into all areas from animation and kind of helping animation. I'm imagining maybe mocap and helping with contacts and hand placement. A lot of this could be improved. And then in the environment design, like I said, procedural techniques to match a specific image, the style transfer techniques are also used quite a lot already, like, and are starting to make their way into feature films. So I would say right now it's probably not that visible because it's bubbling under the surface. It hasn't gone mainstream yet. But in 5 years, I think we're going to see machine learning creeping into a lot of the areas of filmmaking.
So what's next for Cassini? It was left off, as I said earlier, on a cliffhanger. Do we have anything that you could share with the SIGGRAPH audience as far as its future?
We're very excited to keep working on it. We got the chance by winning the competition that gave us a great platform to continue work on the story. And at the moment, we are developing it with a series in mind. That's what we feel like the best format for it at the moment is. So we always imagined the short film to be a teaser. We wanted to raise a few questions, maybe answer some of them in some way, but it was meant to be a teaser. It wasn't meant to be a standalone story that just finishes. And what was exciting for us is just understood that people actually related with the concepts that were a bit more out there, like the whole idea of the fish, the whole idea of the underwater flowers. That's what people reacted to the most. And that gave us the energy of thinking, okay, we might have a good core concept there and let's grow it. So at the moment, we're writing the bigger world. What's the mission that Cassini kind of came from? Like, why is she alone on this planet? And where does she come from? And what is this pollen? Like, why is she looking for it? we're working on a series that answers all those questions, and hopefully it happens very soon. We can share more of it.
We'll all be excited to see the next chapter. And where could our audience catch the current short version of Cassini Logs?
You can watch it on my website on alexpopescu.net or on Vimeo. If you Google Cassini Logs, it should come up.
Wonderful. So I want to take this moment to thank Alex for chatting with us today. Before we wrap, do you have any final words for the audience?
I'd love to say watch this space when it comes to animated content. I think that's the field that is most exciting for me right now. I think there's a lot of fantastic new voices, a lot of young directors coming up. And while blockbuster filmmaking provides an amazing cinema experience, I think it's going to be quite exciting what happens at an indie level in the next few years, because these tools are just a game changer when it comes to what's possible for indie production. And I think we're going to see amazing writing, amazing new stories. And I'm really, really excited to see this field develop in the next few years.
Wonderful. We're all excited to see that next phase. So thank you again, Alex. And this concludes this SIGGRAPH Spotlight podcast. Thank you, everybody.
Fascinating. We can't wait to hear more about what's next in production. Check back soon for the next episode in this mini series. If you like the podcast, subscribe or leave us a review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to help others find us. For more information on upcoming SIGGRAPH conferences, check out the links in our show notes.